Hello, and welcome to the Back Issue Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer.
In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about an older comic book storyline.
In this Back Issue Spotlight, I am joined by James, and we're going to be discussing Hawkman number 1 through 6 of the series that started in 2018. It's one of the many Hawkman series of over time. James, how are you doing tonight?
I am terrific. How are you doing?
I am doing well. Now, I don't know if you remember this or not, but we actually discussed this issue 1 back in Weekly Comics Spotlight 566.
I don't doubt that, because this issue stuck out more than the others. So we must have read it and gone pretty in-depth on it.
Yeah, and it was one that I enjoyed. I mean, I've been following Hawkman since I've been reading DC almost, because Justice League was one of the titles I got into early on. He was a member in the Satellite era back then. So, you know, he'd always be, you know, trading barbs with Green Arrow or palling around with the Atom or something like that.
Yeah.
And the character's had a bumpy history over time. He's been rebooted, retconned, and retooled numerous times. And this title was the one that spun out of the Dark Knight's metal stuff and kind of heralded the return of Carter Hall back to the DC Universe, you know, in his own title for the first time in a little while. I'm trying to remember how long it had been since the previous one, because he's that tier of character that doesn't always have an ongoing title.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Always trying to relaunch an ongoing title?
Yeah, it's weird. He has this popular following where you mentioned Hawkman, and it seems like there's always these rabid, very loyal fans, but I guess there's just not enough of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's weird, because there's always this, we want Hawkman, but whatever, the sales don't pan out, and they tend to relaunch it over and over again. But I always used to see the character and liked it when I would go into comic shops, but I wasn't reading DC, but I thought it was the coolest looking character, you know, with that big mace and everything. Mm-hmm. So I was happy when this came out, and I'm really happy to be on this title, and I felt like Venditti made me really like the character.
Yeah, he did a really good job of taking that convoluted backstory of Hawkman and logically building on it.
I agree. because and the way that he wrote it simple enough where I understood it, but I felt like there was a depth there that longtime readers could get some nuggets and some more information, or, you know, a little more breadth on the character.
Yeah, yeah. As a longtime reader, it's like, okay, I recognize some of the stuff he's drawing on, and some of this of Hawkman reincarnating over time, that was kind of a result of the Zero Hour stuff that Sam and I just talked about. And that was when all the various Hawkman iterations were kind of slammed into a single being. And it's like, oh, well, he's reincarnated, so he's always been Hawkman and always will be Hawkman. Okay, it took a little while for that to kind of gel and to work. So when we got some mentions here of, well, he was Nighthawk back in the Old West, it's like, yeah, I'd seen that before. Yeah. It was cool. And they went, again, some new directions here and expanded on it. So it's... I like it when writers have a respect and knowledge of the history of the characters and are able to organically and logically build on that without having to, oh no, that all doesn't matter, it's all garbage, I'm going to start brand new and retool the characters. Like, ah, you don't have to do that, and this proves that.
I agree. So what in that respect, he reminds me once again of a writer that I keep going back to Sam, you know, when all three of us were on there, like Donnie Cates, where he doesn't throw stuff away, but he kind of expounds on it or changes it up a little bit while keeping and being true to everything that came before it. So I think Venditti did a good job of that.
There's an aspect of being able to take the old stuff, kind of polish it up, and put a new spin on it.
Yeah, and not many writers can do that, and I don't mean that like in an insulting way, but a lot of writers, they're just like, here's my idea, I'm going this direction, and then you guys can fix it later on, and I'm out. But I don't see that here from Venditti. He kind of picked up the pieces, made it very new reader friendly, and took it to another level, and got me real excited to read the Justice, the JSA, and I never read the JSA.
Mm.
I mean, I have the books by Jeff Johns, this big omnibus, and I do plan on reading it one day.
But let's slate that for some Back Issue Spotlights. That's some good stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. JSA by Geoff Johns. I have the omnibus. So give me a reason to crack it open. But this title specifically, as we got near the end, that's what got me excited for it, because I'm like, man, I like this character. I liked where it went. I'm ready to get more into that. And that's difficult to do sometimes with some writers.
Yeah. Well, and what I liked about what Venditti was doing in this is Hawkman has, I'm going to say always, although that's not technically true, he's always been an archaeologist.
Okay, you know, which I like.
Other than when he was, you know, the space cop over on Thanagar only, and, you know, a few times like that. But generally speaking, he's always been an archaeologist. And he pointed out the irony of a character that soars through the skies, spending so much time digging underground in history.
Yeah, kind of funny.
And there are a few other places where we get that kind of aspect of complexity of the character, where it really seems one way and it also seems another. Because there's an aspect of being, you know, having Thanagarian tech and all of that. There's a sci-fi aspect to the character at times. Yet he's going around clubbing people with a mace.
Which is hilarious. When you think about it, it's kind of funny. He has the mace and then he has the other, almost like the Egyptian staff.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I like too, yeah.
Well, and at times, particularly with the more Thanagarian take, he had blasters.
Yeah. So, which take do you like? I don't know.
Oh, man. I
like them both.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and what I loved about this, I mean, this series lasted, what, 29 issues thereabouts?
Yeah, roughly, right around there.
And for a surprising amount of these issues, the guy Hawkman is fighting is Hawkman.
Which is so interesting, and going back and reading that and being there for that, it's kind of cool because you're having to face yourself and explain to yourself why you shouldn't be kicking the crap out of yourself,
mm-hmm.
Which is hilarious. But yeah, I like that, confronting yourself over and over throughout time.
If I had to give this title kind of an overall arc, I would almost call it the Time War of Hawkman, which would be a riff on the Shadow War of Hawkman, which is a miniseries they did back in the, I think, the 80s.
Oh, okay. Cool, cool. Yeah, and I like that. It's a very true title. Mm-hmm. Instead, we got Awakening Part 1, so it's just Awakening.
Yeah, but what was interesting is in this first issue, it sets up the premise of the series.
Yes.
It starts a ticking clock on, hey, there's this big bad that he's going to have to go fight if he can, you know, discover who the big bad is and how he's going to go fight it, all while telling a solid story in that first issue.
Yeah, I love that. So, I mean, at the beginning, when we get just those text boxes, he gives you pretty much everything you need to know about the character right there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the action sequence, you get the friend that he's meeting with. And I love the golem in there. Mm-hmm. I love that whole action sequence. I thought it was really cool. And there was even comedy that he put in there when the golem, he's like, well, I can fly. And then it sprouts wings. That was just terrific.
Yeah. Well, and it had kind of, again, that Indiana Jones sensibility to it.
That's exactly what I would say. Indiana Jones, it felt just like him being an archaeologist. It was such a play on that. You felt like Venditti was a fan of that character.
And did it in a way where it didn't feel like they had just taken Indiana Jones and tossed him in the Hawkman suit.
Correct. Very different. The same vibes and the same feeling, but very different. And mm-hmm. So that was really cool. And you get some other characters in there when you get Xanadu with the blood and all those cool things. Did you like that splash page right after that scene where it's like kind of showing all of his lives throughout over time and realities?
I loved that. And I'm wondering how many of them they had kind of already planned out of who they were and when we would see them.
Yeah, because we do end up seeing, I think, all of these characters or all of these iterations throughout the book.
Do we?
I don't know, but I've seen a lot of them.
Okay.
But I mean, we see quite a few. Probably not all of them, but you see different ones because I noticed them throughout.
Certainly we see the Thanagarian one, who's kind of in the lower left. We get mention of the Kryptonian one that I think we see
yep.
later.
Correct.
Trying to think if we've got the one from the Microverse.
I think so.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think which one that would be. It might be the one that's kind of between the legs of the prince, the Egyptian, you know, guy there.
Yeah. We get quite a few characters from this.
Yeah. There were a few that looked very much like just a different riff on the classic Hawkman.
Yeah.
A few too many that way, almost. But yeah, I loved that. And again, taking the... He had been reincarnating in time and flipping it to now, he's reincarnating in time and space.
Yes. And right after that splash page, that was a foreshadowing of Dark Knight's Death Metal 2, correct?
No.
No?
I don't think so. I thought it was the Deathbringer stuff that was kind of the end of this whole series.
Okay, the Deathbringer. For some reason, I thought I saw those big characters. I'm trying to remember what they were, those big characters in Death Metal 2. But
maybe we did. I don't remember. Death Metal 2 took a while to play out.
It did. It took forever. And I just remember seeing those gigantic characters in there. But they may not have been identical, because I remember they were almost like a ripoff of I don't want to say a ripoff, but what are those big Marvel characters? I can't remember. They come down. Anyways.
The Celestials?
Celestials, yes. We had those in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was really cool.
Well, and again, that splash page of that future doom or whatever, that's the ticking clock they set up.
It is. Yeah. We're headed towards this.
Mm-hmm. So it was a lot to have happen in a first issue, and to do it in a way that told an entertaining story and set some stuff up fairly subtly. Like, again, that friend who'd gotten him to the one place or whatever, it sets up that over his various lives, Hawkman has kind of built up this network of people and their descendants who are willing to help him out over time because he's helped them out.
I agree. Yeah, that's really cool. And I think this first book, most people who read it will enjoy the character after having read this, because I like it for the archaeology thing, the historical thing, the action and adventure. You get the vibes of the Raiders of the Lost Ark or mm-hmm. Indiana Jones. So you get vibes of all these things, and you're getting this cool-looking character who fights with a mace. I mean, it's just... You come out of it feeling so good, and you're like, I remember feeling I'm on board for this. I love this book.
Well, and Hitch on the Art is solid art.
It is. It's solid art for the... That was actually the next thing I was going to ask you. What did you think of the art? You loved it?
I did. I don't think it was Hitch's best work.
I agree. It's not his best, but it was really solid.
Yeah. It was a nice, clean style and did a great job telling the story.
Yeah, and I'm happy that Hitch was on there for a while, because Hitch is kind of notorious for... He can do so many issues, you know, he has to draw ahead, and then he kind of gets behind. So, mm-hmm. But he kept up on the whole six-issue run that we're reviewing.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was pretty much everything I was looking for out of a DC book. You know, acknowledgement of the history, respect of the character, good single-issue story that builds to a larger arc. You know, it was fun stuff.
Yeah, and action-based, so you're entertained. You're not bored. It's not like I'm reading a history book.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely it kept moving the whole time.
Yeah, so I was excited. And so I'm like, wow, this is really cool. And then our when we get to the second chapter, it was kind of cool because, like, I remember I wrote down in here, you know, about it's all about fighting his past self. But I thought it was so cool. Here we are. We're going back to the Egyptian scene and just seeing the jumping through time and seeing how things that happened in his past, he's remembering it today and it's affecting the story now.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that.
Well, and it's a technique that we've seen in different ways and shapes on TV shows like Highlander and stuff like that, or even Angel and such, where things that had happened at some point in the past, and if you've got a character that's lived, you know, hundreds or thousands of years, at some point they had to have something happen that's relevant to whatever the hell is happening today.
Yeah, exactly.
They've had a long enough life to do that.
Yeah, very cool. I mean, we see stuff in here where we see him in the Egyptian style, but then you see him like as a knight back mm-hmm. in the past. It could be a knight Templar, or it could be, you know, who knows, a Teutonic knight, we don't know. And then you see him in the Old West wearing the same little logo, carrying a couple six shooters, you know. I want to read about that one too.
Well, it's funny. If you're curious about Nighthawk, you can read a lot more about that character.
Yeah.
Because that was one of the Western characters that DC had.
Ah, cool.
So back in the Zero Hour time frame, they had basically taken a lot of the characters that had some semblance of a Hawk motif, you know, Nighthawk, Silent Knight, which is on the panel above it here.
And Birdman, I'm assuming, that Native American-looking guy?
I don't know. A Birdman might be new for this.
Yeah, he's on Easter Island, but he looks Native American. I don't know about him.
The other two were long-established DC characters from, you know, the, I'm going to say the 60s, but I could be wrong on that, that they basically said, okay, we're going to tie them into the overall DC universe this way by, you know, having them be a former life of Hawkman.
Ah, so I can read about that stuff. That's cool.
Well, with Nighthawk, one of the characters he would hang around with was a redheaded woman named Cinnamon.
Cinnamon, huh.
Who, you know, Ciara, Hawkwoman, was a reincarnation of. So she was also doing this whole reincarnation thing. So they would often find, you know, again, when they saw those two characters, it's like, he's got a hawk on his, or a bird on his shirt, and she's got red hair like Hawkwoman does. Let's do it that way.
Very cool. That's awesome. You know what? It's so awesome having you here because, like, of course you're here. It's your show. But, I mean,
I like being here for my show. I haven't always been.
I mean, just the knowledge that you're able to bring and the memory you have, it's just fantastic. We were doing our book club last week, and we're sitting there, man, if John Bayo was here, we're just fumbling all over ourselves. I can't remember. But it's amazing you remember all this stuff.
It's getting harder and harder, to be honest.
Hey, you're still doing a good job.
Every time they reboot the characters, though, it gets a little bit more confusing.
Yeah, like, oh, which one is this?
Well, and again, like when I hit that Birdman and stuff, it's like, was he a character before? I don't think so, but, you know, hey, I could be wrong.
Could have been.
you know?
Yeah, this one was kind of cool because we see him as an ancient Egyptian, mm-hmm. basically fighting himself, but yet the current iteration is trying to reason with himself. It's kind of funny.
Before we get there, when he's going to the British Museum and he's talking to the curator, I thought the irony of that curator as he's shaking hands with Carter, saying, man, if he could travel through time, he'd like to go back and shake the hand of the anonymous benefactor who donated the contents of this exhibit on Prince Khufu, you know.
Yeah.
As he's shaking the hand of said anonymous benefactor and also the prince.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
You know, and I can forgive Simon the curator for not knowing that, because, I mean, why would he? Carter hadn't told him.
Yeah.
What I did think was a little dense of the character is when he's going off to go find, what was it, the team's notes or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Carter falls through time or whatever, encounters his Egyptian self or whatever. And then when he comes back, he's all decked out as Hawkman. The curator comes back, and Hawkman's, you know, taking something he's pulled out of the exhibit and flies off. And he's like, oh, I should call security or whatever. Dude, you just left Carter Hall, who's nowhere to be found. Hawkman's mysteriously shown up and is flying off with stuff that Carter was kind of sort of just asking about.
Put two and two together, and, huh, I wonder who's Hawkman. Yeah, he did come off as pretty dense right then.
Yeah, yeah. That was probably doesn't get out much.
But that's where he comes up with the little Egyptian staff that he had, which I liked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he was dual wielding the club and the mace and the staff.
Yeah, yeah. At this point, I was a little unclear how Hawkman was traveling in time to interact with his past self.
Me too.
But it was a fun story, it was a coherent story, and it was a good, okay, we've got an adventure in this issue, so if all I'd read was this issue, I get something out of it. Yet it's building to that larger arc for both the trade and for the whole series.
I agree. Yeah, that was really cool. And as we left that, and we get some scenes of dinosaurs, issue 3 was the one where I took a note, and I was just like, I figured it out why I was hooked on the series the entire time. And it's because of something that most writers don't do. And you get to, literally, if I read that first page,
mm-hmm.
So get to the first page. People know me as Carter Hall, archaeologist and adventurer. Friends, good friends, know I'm also known as Hawkman. For reasons I don't yet understand, blah, blah, blah. He gives a breakdown on everything that's happened up until then, including, though, you know, he's been a ghostly highwayman, a thief, a shadow, a lion man. And he's like, this week alone, I battled a gargantuan gorilla statue and even seemingly slipped through time to fight one of my own past selves. boom, I'm up to speed. Now let's fight the dinosaur. And so I like that it was like a recap. And most of the books that I read today don't do that. And I'm trying to remember, and it takes me like 10 pages before I'm like, oh yeah, this is what's going on.
What I liked about that when he's, you know, I've fought many things. Okay, the ghostly highwayman is the gentleman ghost.
Yeah.
The thief of shadows is Shadow Thief. Lion Mane was the Lion Man. I mean, these are all long-established Hawkman villains. So they're referencing them without making you... And they're telling you it was a ghostly highwayman, not it's the gentleman ghost. And I'm like, well, who the hell's the gentleman ghost?
Yeah.
If you know it, you know it. You get a little extra out of it. If you don't, the way it's presented here is clear. It's accessible.
Yeah, I read that and I didn't know any of that stuff. And I just was like, okay, that's cool. But I felt like I knew what was going on. And so every time I jogged my memory, I was like, oh yeah, this is what's going on. And then we get to the dinosaur fight versus 9 out of 10 writers today, they go right to the fight where they left off with. And then I'm like trying to figure out what's going on. Oh yeah, what happened last month? And I'm scratching my head. So I just appreciated that. And that's where I fell in love with Venditti as a writer.
Yeah, yeah. The accessibility. I mean, there's a lot of stuff here where it was told through captions.
Yeah.
But not in a way where I'm thinking, oh, geez, we're getting an illustrated story.
No. Definitely not. It was just enough, just the right amount.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And when we're getting his journal entry and we're seeing him write the journal entry, it's like, okay, we're in the moment. I'm okay with this.
Yeah. It's kind of cool. It's a different way of doing the same thing, but making us feel like the story's progressing and it's actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Now, what did you think when we hit that 2-page splash of the Fetherians?
Oh, the winged people. What are they called again? Fetherians, yes.
Something like that, yeah.
I was kind of confused at the beginning because I was thinking, aren't these the same people? And why are they attacking him?
Now this is again where I've got a little baggage that I'm bringing into the story that you don't have.
Oh, okay.
These I cannot pronounce it. I got it the one time. these guys, they
the feathered people.
They are the race that Northwind of Infinity Inc. was a hybrid from.
Oh, okay.
So at some point in the greater Hawkman mythos, a anthropologist colleague of Hawkman, Fred Cantrell, wanted to go study these guys because I guess he'd heard about them from Hawkman or whatever. Hawkman got the permission of the Fetherians and got the guy to where he could, you know, go live with them, study with them. Guy falls in love, has a kid. All of this is happening on Earth 2, by the way. Pre-crisis, I believe.
Okay.
So they wind up having a half-human, half, you know, Fetherian kid who later goes and joins the Earth 2 kind of sort of equivalent, I don't want to say of the Teen Titans, but kind of, the second-generation JSA characters.
Okay.
So when I'm seeing these, I'm like, I know who they are. I mean, not these specific ones, they're an offshoot tribe or whatever, but again, it's taking a currently lesser known aspect of the DC universe and mythology, but a definitely established part of the Hawkman mythos, and bringing it into play.
Okay, and when I was reading it, I had no clue about any of that stuff, so I didn't know if these were a new type of creature that's been introduced or a new thing, and he introduced them, when I say he, Venditti introduced them to me. I got the whole background about how they came and how they're from the same type of people and an offshoot of the Thanagarians and all that stuff. So I was like, okay, this is cool. I'm learning all this stuff.
They're not actually offshoots of the Thanagarians.
They're not. Okay.
And I don't think he said that. I think what they said was that this was a tribe offshoot from the main group of Fetherians or whatever, because apparently they live elsewhere.
That's what it was. Okay. My bad. Yeah.
No, it's all right.
I'm surprised they were so weak because there was quite a few of them. But he did have a mace for a while.
Yeah, but they had talons and there were a lot of them.
Exactly. I thought he would have been cut up a heck of a lot worse with those talons and the claws on their hands.
What did you think when he winds up dropping his mace and it comes back to him?
I was kind of surprised because I thought I didn't know that was like Thor where it would come back to you.
Well, and clearly neither did Hawkman.
Yeah, he's like, this came back.
It did definitely have shades of Thor's hammer there. But hey, it was cool. It worked. It's nth metal. You know, I can go with it.
Yeah, so basically a little bit of a maybe a retcon, or maybe it's Nth Metal that makes it do it. Who knows? But I went with that. I thought it was a cool, like, new little twist.
Mm-hmm. I'm taking it as he's learning more about his past selves. Some of the abilities that he may have forgotten he ever had are coming back to the surface.
Correct.
So I don't consider this a retcon in so much as it's not like he was saying he'd always been able to do this.
It's something he may have remembered from a past life.
But it's suddenly something he can now do.
Which I liked. Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. And then he meets with the old man of the tribe, which was kind of cool. And he goes there and he finds another key to the puzzle.
Yeah. Yeah. And this was one where, you know, I'm like, where are they going with this and what's going on? And we start to get a little bit of the, again, Thanagarian tech, unsurprisingly. And then, you know, as he remembers that, bam, he essentially, you know, wakes up on Thanagar.
Boom, here I am. And once again, with himself.
Well, and at this point, I'm thinking that Hawkman has kind of an innate time travel ability triggered by his memories.
That's what I was thinking. It's memory triggered, and he goes back to maybe a place in time where he existed in that world or at that time. Boom, there he's there.
Well, and you figure that presumably Shiara has the same sort of ability.
Correct.
Based on what we learn later in the series and such. And I'm thinking, Grant, you don't need to do it with Hawkman or Hawkwoman themselves, but it'd be fun if they, you know, had a kid that could innately travel through time.
That'd be cool.
It would be funny because he's already had, you know, on Earth 2, a kid who became the Silver Scarab. Northwind was kind of sort of an adopted son of sorts. So throwing a third kid into that sort of a mix would be kind of funny.
Do they still exist?
I don't think so, because I'm trying to think. Northwind, I think, survived Crisis because I think he later became... Well, Infinity Inc. survived Crisis.
Okay.
But they were then, at that point, the essentially the kids of the Golden Age Hawkman, who at that point was thought to be different than the Silver Age, this Hawkman. Then Zero Hour kind of slams them all together. I don't recall how much Silver Scarab had been seen since then. And if he was, I think it was over in the Sandman series because he became a later version of the Golden Age Earth 2 Sandman, not to be confused with the Sandman of Neil Gaiman's whose series he showed up in. So yeah, I think, I mean, since Rebirth and the New 52, I don't think we've seen either Northwind or Silver Scarab. But they did exist after Crisis for a while.
Yeah. All right, cool.
But this is, again, where the Hawkman's history in particular gets more convoluted than the average DC continuity.
Even more so.
And I think that's saying something.
Yeah. Because a lot of them are kind of convoluted.
Yeah. But what I loved here when we get the final splash page of Hawkman versus Hawkman there.
Yeah.
Is what a great job Hitch does with the similarity of the outfits and the differences of the outfits.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. You know, they're very similar but very different.
They've got the cross straps, you know, with the bird emblem in the center, but they're not identical straps. The helmets are a little different, obviously. The wings look different, as do the boots, but they both have the green motif and yellow aspect, so you can see the clear similarities, yet it's not... Wait, I'm getting confused as to which is which.
Exactly. The same but different. The color palette's the same. But yeah, I like that. Very cool. Yeah. I thought that was a nice splash page.
Well, it ends on a moment where, because of the dialogue of, you know, I'm Wingman Carter Hall of the Thanagarian Police Force and you're under arrest. Okay, we understand they're going to be fighting. Mm-hmm. We understand why they're going to be fighting. Hawkman doesn't want to be under arrest. Who would? And we know who this guy is.
Yeah. So,
how many writers today would have done this panel without that dialogue?
I would think most would. They. That's what happens sometimes when we used to review the single comics, and we get to the big splash page, and I don't know who it is, and I'm like, all right, well, that looked cool. And we would talk after we did the review, and you'd have to tell me what in the heck was going on or who it was, because I don't know.
Well, as I've been reading some recent comics, and we'll discuss this probably on the next monthly comic spotlight, one of the recurring notes I'm jotting down is, you know, it ended on a reveal, but that reveal was lost on me. I didn't understand what they were revealing.
Yeah, that it's happens like, a lot.
I could feel it was a big moment. I just didn't understand why.
That's the worst. When you get to a big bump, 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 everyone looks shocked and you see somebody and I'm like, who is that? Why do I care? I don't know.
Yeah, and I consider myself a reasonably informed comic book reader.
Yeah.
And the other comment I was finding myself writing a lot was the heavy use of captions and stuff. And again, this title is using it a lot, but in a way that doesn't bother me because it doesn't feel like I'm getting a glossed over version of the story.
No, it flows naturally. I think because there's such a nice mix of here's a few dialogue boxes, here's the action, here's the text, and he mixes it so well that nothing feels overbearing.
Well, and it's funny, because like this last page here, there's the caption of, why am I never happy to see me?
Yeah.
Funny line, essentially his thought balloon, but not totally. It's more as if he's narrating the story to us.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that would have worked if it had been a thought balloon.
It could, but yeah, I know what you mean. It's more like he's reading back and looking at his journal entry.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I never happy to see me?
So, again, Venditti's doing some great stuff here, and I don't think he was getting enough credit for it.
I agree. And this is why I say he's one of the best writers at DC. Mm-hmm. Him and Tom Taylor are two of the best. And I think the reason why is the accessibility and the way that he presents the material. Not just the story that he's scripting, which is very good, but the way he's presenting that story, which a lot of writers can't do.
Well, and then again, you team him up with a superstar artist like Brian Hitch, and you get some great stuff.
Yeah. You have me as a new Hawkman fan.
Again, they've got tons of great stuff over the years, and tons of not-so-great stuff over the years for the character, too. So whenever a new Hawkman series would start like this one, I'm like, yeah, I'll try it, but I'm not going to get my hopes up. This one, again, great stuff.
It was. It was great, and it, like I said, made me a fan of the character, made me want more, and got me to the point when it ended, I was kind of disappointed. Mm-hmm. Which, some comics end, and I'm kind of like, okay, I just kind of move on. But this one, I was really kind of hurt a little bit.
Yeah, same here. It was one that it's like, okay, what's this creative team going to do next? And it's been a little while, and I still don't know.
Yeah, I'm hoping something good.
Now, when we get to that next issue, we start with not Thanagar, but a faraway world. Because at this point, it's actually been a few issues since we had that big picture threat from that first issue. So they kind of got to reassert it.
Yeah, exactly. And the people that have like the tattoos that almost look like those Fatherians.
Yeah.
Very similar. So I just see a correlation there. They're not the same, but you could see maybe a tree, a branch way down the road. Who knows?
They at least have the same sense of style and tattoos.
Exactly. They like the same tats.
Well, it's funny because I think that's one of the shorthands for their alien. They got to look a little different. So do we give them bumps on the nose, the forehead? Do we give them tattoos? What do we do?
We'll tat their faces. That'll work.
Yeah. Well, and their necks and doesn't seem to be on their arms, though. Yeah. What I also noticed was how similar all of their attire is.
Yeah, very similar.
There is like, no fashion sense on this planet.
None. It's a very bland color palette.
Other than the big statue of the Hawk dude.
Yeah.
He clearly didn't follow their style guidelines.
No, he was all out. He was the fashion aficionado for the entire planet.
Yeah. Well, Goldhawk's going to do what Goldhawk's going to do.
Yeah.
And again, it was one that, while it wasn't the classic, you know, Hawkman design, hit enough of the buttons to say, yep, that's a version of Hawkman.
I agree. Very cool.
So, but yeah, they did need to kind of reassert the Deathbringers. I think they actually named them here.
Yep, boom, and you see the destruction and what's going to be coming.
Yeah, because, I mean, the ticking clock had gotten a little, you know, hard to hear in the last issue or two.
Correct.
And then, of course, we flip back to Thanagar and Hawkman fighting Hawkman.
Yeah, and nice action sequence, because you got the Hawkman with the pistol chasing after the guy with the mace. I'd rather have the pistol.
Does he have the mace at that point? I don't see it.
I don't see it. I know he must have it somewhere. Does he keep it strapped to his back? I don't know.
Okay, what's interesting
maybe is... Maybe he tossed and he's waiting for it to come back.
That first panel across the two pages, Hawkman's wings aren't out.
Oh, yeah, it's not. He's, like, just jumping off.
And then the next one they are. Now, granted, they retract and stuff, so that's cool.
Maybe he was taking a nosedive and then just, boom, popped them out at the last second.
He was, because based on the statue they were standing on being kind of behind them and above them.
Yeah, he just took a nosedive.
Dove off. Yeah.
Cool stuff you can do when you have wings.
This reminded me of almost like a Star Wars kind of, you know, fight scene with vehicles or whatever, except they're in wings.
Yeah, exactly. Or like almost when they were in that, oh, what is that? The Death Star. You know, that little alley when they're going down?
Oh, the trench or whatever, yeah.
The trench. So that's what it reminds me of, because it's tight quarters, so they're zooming in between the buildings.
What got me with that is, granted, some of the lines are the rain. They looked like there were wires going across these streets with all the lights and stuff, and I'm like, that could be dangerous to fly through.
Yeah, that would be dangerous.
But man, I would love to see like an animated or live-action version of this.
It would be cool. That would be really cool.
Yeah, this would be some great visuals.
Like the Tokyo lights down below. It'd be really awesome. Yeah, I like this.
Yeah, this city feels like a cross between Tokyo, Hong Kong, or like Las Vegas.
Yeah, I could see that. All of them.
Up until you get to where they fly up in the sky, and we see that some of this is almost like out of Avatar with the floating cities.
Yeah, and for some reason, like, you see him flying through there. You don't see the mace the entire time, but then you see the mace appear.
Yeah.
I don't know where it came from.
Well, there's a visual aside. Effect around the mace head itself.
Yeah, is that stick that was on his side the mace, and then the head appears?
That's what I'm wondering.
Because you do see the stick hanging off the side earlier.
I think it is.
So that was the little mace, and so it just kind of pops up, boom. All right, well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Something new.
Definitely cool. So this had some fun stuff, and just Hawkman trying to reason with himself.
Yeah, I really like this one where he's trying to talk to himself. You know, the traffic, you idiot, they're kind of wrestling. They get back to the statue of basically, like, someone really important. You're assuming, you know, a founder of this world in some sorts. But then it was kind of cool because he finally kind of calmed him down, was able to reason with himself. Because every other time it was fisticuffs the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the concept of Hawkman reasoning with himself, I think, is just kind of hilarious given the hot-headed nature of the character.
Yeah. And I liked how he kind of like takes care of him when the other guys show up, the other cops. Boom. But knowing what he knows, he's just like, I took out the trash, basically. He didn't say it that way. But he knew he didn't, you know, take him out.
Well, and this is where we see Shiara for really the first time in this series.
Yeah, right there. Boom.
And again, Hawkwoman, major character in all the Hawkman mythos, sometimes goes by Hawkgirl and stuff.
Funny,
and at
she's
one point,
like,
had the title herself.
Yeah, and it's funny. She's like, did he seem familiar to you? Yeah, she would know.
Yeah. So definitely, I mean, this was doing such a great job of doing some callbacks to previous eras of the character, building the larger story, yet still telling, you know, an entertaining single issue.
And so you had said earlier when we were talking that Hawkman and the Atom tend to team up or bump into each other quite a bit in the past.
Yes.
So you were happy to see the ending of this, then?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because when he's got that little device and winds up in the microverse and sees the Atom, I mean, again, we had here that network of people helping Hawkman and stuff like that. That was cool. But the Atom is one of Hawkman's closest allies. I mean, they shared a title back in the late 60s when the two characters, because Adam's another one they keep trying to give a title to, because at one point, Hawkman sustained a title, the Atom sustained a title, and then it got to where they just couldn't. So what they did, and I think it was 1968, is, well, let's do the Atom and Hawkman as a title. So now these two are teaming up on a regular basis.
Ah, okay.
So these are those you know, B-list characters that, again, can't sustain their own title like A-list characters, Superman, Batman, or really, I'd say there's A-list of those that can support multiple titles. There's the B-list that can support a title.
A title for a period of time, yeah.
These are more that C list. If they can do it for a period of time, frequently but not always.
Yeah, like he made it to 29 issues here, so that was a pretty good run. Yeah. And now, would you? I hate to derail things, but would you say this is a definitive run of Hawkman? Is this one of the best, or are there better?
Man, that's a great question and a tough one to answer off the cuff. I would say this is certainly of recent years, definitely one of the definitive runs.
Cool.
I would say if you were to look at the overarching grand history of the character, yeah, I would say it holds up. And
cool.
Part of it is it again respects and recognizes the past of the character.
Very cool. So I'm even more happy that I read it then.
I'm trying to think what other, I mean, some of the Hawkworld stuff that Tim Truman did was excellent. There have been some other really good runs. There have been some other runs that were just okay. I enjoyed them a lot, but I'm not going to say, ooh, you've got to go hunt them down and they're must reads, because they're average stuff.
This is kind of like falls into that must read category, in my mind, even for people who don't like the character.
I think if you're a fan of Hawkman and you haven't read this, you should.
Yeah.
And if you want a sense of, I don't want to say what comics were like back in kind of that mythical heyday of back in the day for me, but this hit a lot of those notes that I wanted.
Yeah, it's weird because it felt like a retro comic, yet it felt very fresh and new.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, once again, tough thing to do, but it felt like a nostalgia book, but and what's weird is it's the first time I'm reading it, but it read like an 80s comic, but modern.
Yeah.
Like classic, but not dated.
Well, I think part of what gave it that sense is while this has an ongoing story, a lot happens in each issue, and it has a sense of completeness per issue, if not totality.
Yes, I agree. And it's missing sorely from a lot of single issues today.
Well, I mean, here's another one where we're ending with the introduction of the character. We've hit that a few times in this book, and you could argue, oh, it's a cliffhanger. No, it's not. It's a reveal, and it's teasing what's coming next, but in a way that got me hooked, and I really want to see what comes next, not a, well, they're just doing a shill for the next issue.
Yeah, I would agree. And it was really cool. You start off, and you realize how good of friends these people are as they're embracing each other, and they kind of give each other a breakdown of everything that's been going on. Really cool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's interesting because in the New 52 era, Ray had been the Atom kind of, sort of, but not entirely. And this was really after Rebirth and stuff, reasserting that, yeah, he always had been the Atom. So I like the character a lot, and seeing these two back together, ton of fun.
Yeah. And so I equated him, because I didn't know about the Atom, is like the Ant-Man character.
Mm-hmm.
Except he lives full time in this micro universe, pretty much.
Currently he does, but at other points not so much.
Yeah, so he's kind of like that, and I really like Ant-Man as a character, so I kind of like, you know, glommed onto that, and I'm like, okay, I like this character. This is cool. Let's run with it.
Well, when we get the 2-page splash of the Atom on Hawkman's shoulders, he's flying and stuff. I mean, that kind of visual was, you know, almost iconic in the old Justice League stuff.
Ah, I like that. I like that splash page. It's really cool.
But then when we later get Atom growing a little less small, essentially making him a giant in the Microverse, compared to a comparatively tiny Hawkman, I mean, that had shades of Giant Man and the Wasp to it.
Yeah, it did. That was really cool.
Yeah,
I liked it.
I liked that aspect. And just going around the Atom's base in the Microverse there was kind of cool.
Yeah. And when they went to that dangerous area, those things that almost look like the Ents from Lord of the Rings. Is that what you thought of too?
No,
the
not
trees
really,
or...
but I'm not, you know, as big on the Lord of the Rings as some people.
Oh, okay. That's kind of how I saw them.
Yeah. What I was really thinking at that point was more Mogo of the Green Lantern Corps.
Oh, okay. All right. Cool, cool.
We've got a planet, Mozga or whatever, that's sentient. So it's like, okay, that was the comparison I was making.
Ah, gotcha.
But man, that 2-page splash when the Atom is just gargantuan.
It was awesome.
Loved that. And it's funny because we'd seen that sort of thing with the Atom before in the Microverse in the Justice League title ages ago.
Yeah, I love that. That's I don't know which splash I like more, but I love both of them. I probably like this splash page more than the first one.
Yeah, they use the splash pages well in this title.
They really do. And I like, I can apply my science a little differently here.
Mm-hmm.
That was really cool.
Man, one thing I would like to see with this version of the Atom, and because to me this is kind of that 80s flavor of the Atom, and that same 80s version of the Barry Allen Flash, I would love to see those two pair up and almost out-science each other.
Oh, that would be cool. I would totally be on board to see that. That would be funny.
Do some kind of almost MacGyver riff with those two.
Who's the smarter character? Exactly.
The smarter, more creative, who can do an applied physics lesson the best? Yeah.
Who could think well on their toes?
I would almost have the Hawkman there, you know, having to witness that, saying, okay, guys, get over the science. And then finally just pulling out the mace and blasting through a door just to be done with it while one of them was going to, oh, well, I could super speed it this way, or I could shrink it that way, or, you know, whatever.
That'd be hilarious.
Kind of, you know, when Indiana Jones gets out the gun and stuff just to be done with it.
All right, John, you're going to write the next Hawkman book, right?
I would love to, but don't know that they'd have it. And honestly, I don't know that they would want it, because as much as I'm loving this, I don't know that this is a typical direction for a DC book these days.
I agree.
That was, again, part of why I was loving it so much.
It was so different, and I love this book so much. You know, as we were going back through it, I'm like, man, I didn't pick it for my book of the year. Maybe I should have. That's what I was thinking when I was reading it. Just in 2020, because it was so good through the entire run, and that's so hard to do today. Just from, you know, book one to book 29, it was just great the entire time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and again, this final issue we're talking about, number six, it was, to me, a callback to the satellite era of the Justice League, when Hawkman and the Atom were spending a lot of time together, but doing it without calling back to anything specific or even necessarily referencing that time period?
Not at all, yeah.
But just the two knew each other, they liked each other, they worked well together. They were giving each other some grief of, well, you know, if I was this guy in the Microverse, that means technically I discovered the Microverse, not you.
Yeah.
Kind of the agree to disagree kind of thing.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. There was some fun moments.
There was. They're giving each other a lot of grief. The art in here was amazing. The action was, it was quick paced. This one read really quick because of all the stuff that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an exciting book from, you know, the first page to the last page. And I just had a lot of fun with it. And, you know, they found the ship with the nth metal, which was really mm-hmm. cool. So, I mean, there was just a lot of fun stuff in here.
Well, I loved when Hawkman's trying to turn the thing on, and it's like, command not recognized.
Oh, that
command
was awesome.
Not recognized.
And it's like, he's sitting there, he's like, blast off ship, up, up, and away. Finally, soar.
Well, the up, up, and away was just kind of funny. It's like, no, this is not, you know, Superman's.
I know, that made me laugh. I was like, up, up, and away. That was funny.
Although it would be funny to have had a follow-up with this with Hawkman in the Supermobile, and that being the phrase to turn it on.
That would have been hilarious. And Adam give him grief. It's about time.
Yeah, it just had some fun stuff. And the reveal of a Zeta Drive, which I don't know that we'd ever actually heard or seen of a Zeta Drive before, but the Zeta Beam
yeah.
is what powers Adam Strange getting to and from Ran.
Yeah.
And Ran and Thanagar have a long history together. So using it here made a ton of sense.
It did make sense. And there's a ton of stuff like that in here. So if you're reading the titles, you know the universe, you know your books, there's a lot of stuff in here for you, I think. Mm-hmm. And there's Easter eggs throughout, whether you're if you're a longtime reader. And if you're a new reader, you can just jump in and enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we get the ticking clock at the end. But I thought this was just so good. I thought the art was excellent. Did Hitch stay on for the entire run? I honestly can't remember.
I don't recall.
I don't recall either. So we'll assume he did. We'll just think good thoughts. But
either way, the quality of the art, I think, remained consistent. Even if they got somebody else, they got an equal caliber.
Yeah, I agree. Because it was just terrific the entire time. And the writing was great. And I remember where it was going. I felt like this was the buildup, and this is the leading to the JSA, and which everyone was excited about. And I was never really excited about the JSA because I hadn't read it, even though I had some omnibus on it. But this got me excited to read it. And so I think when you get a good writer taking a character in this exciting direction and building and this lore about him and taking him in a new bold direction and having a lot of fun with it, it gets the people who are reading the books excited. What's next? What's next? And now I felt like the pause has kind of like broken that a little bit. The 2 month future state thing where Venditti's not even writing any of those.
Well, I've been a fan of the JSA since the early 80s when I encountered the initial issue of All-Star Squadron.
Oh, yeah.
And that was Earth 2 JSA set in World War II. And actually, it wasn't the JSA themselves, but characters around them. So you'd see Hawkman occasionally, whatever, but you'd see some of the lesser-known characters at the time. You know, Tarantula, Johnny Quick, Liberty Bell, Robot Man, Firebrand, etc. So got to be a huge fan of the Roy Thomas Earth 2 JSA, you know, characters and whatnot. So, yeah, I totally recommend reading that, reading the Jeff Johns JSA run, which has a ton of Hawkman in there as well. And, you know, I agree entirely that if you've got a good writer who's telling a good take on a character, you can really get some people excited about not only that character, but the ones around that character. And frankly, use that as a way to sell trade paperbacks and back issues on those other titles.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, for me, this was a really great run of Hawkman. It was a fun exploration of his past lives, some that we'd seen before, some that we hadn't. We were seeing some little-used parts of the DC Universe, Dinosaur Island being one of them and such. And again, it reminds me of what I consider to be kind of those quote-unquote better times of the DC Universe, where I was, frankly, much more excited to be reading the comics every week.
Definitely. And it also got me interested. I wouldn't say excited, but it got me interested to read other Hawkman runs. Because mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, I know I picked up, because Jeff Johns, I liked some of his writing, so I picked up a Jeff Johns Hawkman. I haven't read it yet, but I'm like, man, I want to go read that and see. Maybe it was one of these other iterations. You know, I'm not saying that's what it was, but I want to read about Hawkman in these different eras. I want to read about, you know, just some of the stuff that was alluded to in here. And will that come about? Who knows? I can hope. But I thought this was fantastic. And I thought it was a lot of fun. I like the mace, how there's like a Thor aspect to it now, mm-hmm. because it gives the character a little more on the power and ability side. And he's more of that. I wouldn't even call him a street-level character. He's got these powers. He's got these abilities. But at the same time, he's very human, very fallible. He can die and come back and die and come back. And I like that about him. It's just very cool.
Yeah, I think they had a good take on the character that he wasn't perfect, but he was competent.
Yes.
And again, even when we just get, you know, like the brief mentions of, oh, yeah, you were known as Avion, you know, back at some point in the past in the Microverse and stuff. Okay, cool. We get to see the costume once, and I'm pretty sure it was in the splash page on the first issue or whatnot. But the little Easter eggs and stuff are fun, and the fact that it went for, you know, 2.5-ish years, telling the same story without me ever getting bored, okay, move on, or anything like that, I was impressed by that. Very pleased.
Yeah, me too. I was impressed and pleased. I feel like I can't say this enough. And, you know, when we used to do the weekly spotlight, it was tough. But, like, this was one that would pop up and it would always make me happy. Mm-hmm. And it was one that I would always tell people, hey, if you're not reading this, you got to read it. Now the thing's done and it's being collected. And I feel like if people really need to even go back, even though with all the new stuff coming out, and read this run, because it was so worthwhile, it was so fun, it's just very enjoyable. It's almost deserving of a nice big hardcover, which I'm sure will be solicited one day, and I'll pick it up, because it was that good.
Now, we covered issue number 1 of Hawkman in Weekly Comic Spotlight 566, mm-hmm. issue number 7 in Weekly Comic Spotlight 592, mm-hmm. Issue number 13 in Weekly Comic Spotlight 618, and I don't think I checked after that.
Yeah, I think we did one near the end, too.
We did at least one more, probably two more. And it was a good title. Great title.
It was so solid. You and I, the way we used to pick, you know, we'd get together and we'd look ahead. Oh, what's coming out? What's coming out? And it was so enjoyable reading this title that it was just an easy go-to. Well, we haven't read this in about 6 months or six issues. Let's go back to this.
It's a new arc. Let's go for it. Yeah.
Yeah, and it works well.
What's funny is I've had times where there's always been a book I want to do, so it'd come up in a rotation, and invariably it's, oh, that was just a bad one to review.
Yeah.
That never happened with Hawkman.
It didn't. Every issue that we reviewed was excellent, fantastic. And you figure the end of the arc would be the big wham, bang, you know, the end of the six-issue arc. But every time this is like the new thing, it was fantastic. It was just good and just great material.
For me, that goes back to every issue had a solidity to it, a beginning, middle, and end of something,
mm-hmm.
but not a beginning, middle, and end of everything.
Yeah. Like in this, I loved every issue that we reviewed. Number three stood out to me just because of the recapping at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And it made me, that's where I fell in love with Venditti's writing style. It was that particular issue when it triggered. I was like, oh, this is why I'm liking it so much.
Yeah.
This is what made it so enjoyable. This is why I didn't drop off the book or get bored or try to remember what in the heck's going on.
Well, and I'd be game for doing the next six issues and revisiting this because it's great stuff.
Hey, we can do it again. We have nothing but time on our hands.
Yeah. Well, and again, the Geoff Johns JSA, definitely be up for that. It was some great stuff.
Actually, that's a perfect thing to say with reviewing Hawkman. We got nothing but time on our hands. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah.
Anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool.
The April previews came out on March 31st, and the deadline for preview spotlight number 161 is the morning of Saturday, April 10th. Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. And a quick reminder that we've also got the recommendation roundtable episodes going. The point of those episodes is to help people find other ways to spend their time. So send in pics of comic books, either older ones, back issues, trades, whatever, novels, television shows, movies, video games, if there's a board game you think people might really enjoy or something. Let's get that out there. We've got a lot of ways we can spend our time in helping people find things that they might be interested in. It's just a great thing to do. I've gotten a lot of clips from Billy Hogan. I want to thank him for that. It reminded me that I should really go reread Astro City and put a few other things kind of back on my radar, including a couple of novels he recommended. I've added those to my reading list. We'll see when I get to them. But we've got no deadline for these episodes. The way these episodes work is you send in one clip per pick, and that could be a particular book or video game or TV show, or it could be a series of books. Anything that's kind of a unified thing. And when I get enough of those clips, I'll string them together, I'll kick out an episode. So that means if I get tons of clips, like when Billy sent me about, I don't know, an hour and 45 minutes of some great clips, that was enough for me to get two episodes put together, about an hour for one and about 45 minutes or so for the other. So that's what episodes 2 and 3 are. But if I don't get clips, it may be a while before that next episode comes out. And the reason I'm doing this is there are a lot of things hitting like the streaming services and stuff like that on not really a set cadence like we've got for the preview spotlight. So if you wake up one morning and say, you know what, there's a bunch of stuff I think people might enjoy, spend a few minutes, send in the clips, they get in the queue. And if it's another few months before you do the next one, that's great. But hopefully we have enough people sending in clips on a regular enough basis that we can be putting one of these episodes out every month, every other month, or something like that. So once again, the point here is just to recommend older comic books, novels, television shows, movies, video games, or anything else that doesn't really fit the format of the preview spotlight, but that you really want to kind of share your love of and encourage other people to check out. So once again, there's no deadline on those recommendation roundtable clips. It's an open invitation for everybody at all times. So please send in clips when you've got something you're thinking about and share the love.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.